This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. The pandemic took a big bite out of tourism, and that's been felt by the Orange County Convention Centre. The Convention Centre is working to cut costs at the vast complex as it waits for the crowds to come back.
Well, Mark Tester is the Executive Director of the Orange County Convention Centre. Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So, I guess 2020 was kind of a year for the books, and not in a good way as far as tourism goes in Central Florida, and particularly for an organization like the Convention Center, which typically you would have a lot of people going through your doors. I wonder if you talk a little bit about the plan to trim the budget a little bit, and in particular to cut the workforce by about 55%. What exactly is going on there, and what's the timeline for that?
Sure. So we actually started off our fiscal year 2020 on pace to have a record year in Orange County. In our first 6 months, our fiscal year starts October the 1st, and we were really ahead of pace when groups began to cancel in mid-March. So coming into this budget year, which again began on October the 1st, we were absolutely faced with a budget that we had submitted that wasn't going to actualize. So we had to begin to formulate on what we were going to do. Our revenues have been significantly cut, and we rely on two key revenue sources. First is the tourist development tax, or the hotel tax that guests pay when they stay in the hotel. That pays for our debt, our capital, and any operating shortfall that we have. And then there's the revenue that we generate. And of course, when events cancel, that virtually was cut to very, very little. And the first thing we did was we looked to cut any expense that we could in our budget that we could cut. Cleaning, utility spends, obviously less shows means less electricity and water and other things. So we went all around our budget and cut as much as we could. And then at that same time that was occurring, we really got a fortunate opportunity that the CARES Act funding began. And the county had a real need for polished and experienced people to help that process. And right away, we found that as a great opportunity. And we partnered with the county to supply just about 80 of our people that worked full time on CARES Act funding. So they took calls, helped people with their applications, did a variety of different things. And a lot of our people, college educated, very experienced, were absolutely able to provide a level of service that the county and our citizens received that wouldn't have been available if they had hired off the street. You know, very much trained, very polished, very experienced in the way of the county. So that worked out tremendously. And salary and benefits were paid for by the CARES Act funding for dollars. And so anybody that was paid, that was working on CARES Act, that was covered. And that was a great opportunity for us. And then we were approached by the county utilities department and said, there is a job hiring freeze all across the county due to COVID. And their business was actually up. People were staying at home, using more water, using more of their services than before. Yet they had a hiring freeze like everyone else in the county, and they needed some positions temporary filled. And so that was absolutely a tremendous opportunity to begin transferring employees over to the utilities department. And all told, between CARES Act funding, transfers to utility, and now other departments within the county, will transferred at one time or another about 190 of our full-time equivalents. And when we need the employees, we can call them back temporarily and then send them back. So it really has been a best case scenario for us.
The revenue and expenditure, if I'm just looking at some of the data from last year, $75.3 million in revenue and then $74.6 million in expenditures. What does it look like for the coming year? Like, what are you anticipating in terms of what's going to come in and how much you are going to have to spend?
Well, that's kind of been a moving target. You know, we are waiting for events to come back, and we're very hopeful that events really start really turning the corner. We're looking at June, and then in the summer months really picking up. We've got a tremendous calendar of events that are in the following, you know, the last 3-4 months of the year. So we're really optimistic that comes back. But certainly we are, you know, looking significantly less. you know, we've already trimmed our budget, by about $17 million, and that number probably will go well north of that. And mm-hmm. depends on the events. Every time you have an event, you've got expenses along with it. So it really is a moving target, at this time.
What's your strategy for trying to get people to come back? Because, you know, one of the things about the convention center is that space is enormous. And if I think of some of the shows that I've covered as a reporter, like IAPA, for example, the themed entertainment industry trade show, that thing is huge to the point where you can have simulations of roller coaster rides and the like on a convention floor, you know, just acres and acres of space, and there's still room to burn. So, I mean, as part of the strategy been saying to people, look, you can spread out here. You can come back because we can ensure social distancing.
Yeah, and that's absolutely what we've been doing. So we've got a three-pronged approach on hosting modified events. We have not hosted anything yet to the size and scope of IAPA. That will come in late fall, actually next fiscal year. They did go virtual for this mm-hmm. fiscal year in October, November.
Was that disappointing, Mark?
We certainly want everyone to host their event as they feel they safely can. You know, it just been realistic as of late that events, especially with international scope, with travel bans for corporations, with international travel restrictions, that event of that scope in October of 2020, was faced as a decision that they needed to cancel. But we're working with each event based on their own needs. Just several weeks ago, we had the largest business-to-business event post-pandemic, the Surf Expo, and they hosted their event and had about 800 10x10 booths, which is pretty significant, they had about 3,000 people in attendance. Now those numbers are significantly down what they're generally used to, but it was a great event for them. And so what they did along with we've got a three-pronged approach, which is our recovery and resiliency guidelines, which kind of outlines everything we're doing. We were one of the first convention centers to receive the Global Biorisk Advisory Council's GBAC Star accreditation, which is from a third-party validation on cleanliness, disinfection, and disease control. And then we have a partnership with Orlando Health and what we're calling the medical concierge, where they are consulting with each event and helping them educate on how to have a safe event, what to do, and how to do it safely, and giving them materials to help promote their event. And so the Surf Expo, really partnering with us, put a tremendously robust safety plan in place, and ensured that everyone was wearing their mask, that hand sanitizers and everything was working. Their floor was, like you may have noticed at IAPA, where they bring the aisles in as close as they can. And then they want them to be full. They want aisle density. They want everything to look back. And it's a perception-wise, that's what you kind of want to do in a trade. Now it's the exact opposite. You bring those aisles, you spread them way out. Generally, shows aren't doing aisle carpeting, so there's no allergens caught up. They do one-way aisles. They spread everything out. They're doing a lot of other things to ensure that people operate and feel comfortable. And the industry all was looking at us saying, what are they doing? This is the first large B2B event. Numbers of customers were here looking at what they were doing, copying what they're doing, and ready to come back.
And then, you know, one of the other things that there's been a little bit of scrutiny on, especially over the last 10 months because of the situation with the economy in Orange County, is the plan to expand the convention center. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's some $605 million, which was earmarked for that expansion. What can you tell me about that? I mean, is that going to go ahead at some point, or are you in sort of a limbo as far as that's concerned?
So we have terminated all contracts with the design team at this point. We could only delay it for a certain period of time, and we were not going to have the finances ready within that time frame. So we did terminate that. We're about 50% design of that process. It was the $605 million plan was actually two distinct projects. One was truly an expansion of the facility, a 200,000 square foot multi-purpose hall on one side of the facility, of this one side of our north-south building. That was going to be either additional exhibit space or a large plenary session or for sporting events, a column-free 200,000, very flexible space, but truly an expansion of the facility and what had been originally planned when the building was built. The other side was a grand concourse with ballrooms and meeting rooms, and that's what I would call a finishing of what was originally planned. So when the facility originally opened, it opened in 2003, and obviously that was around 9/11, and so from some value engineering had to occur during that time, and so that was value engineered out of what was originally planned for the facility. And so right now, from the south to north concourse, you have to actually walk outside. There's connectivity challenges in that building. There is no dedicated ballroom and a limited number of meeting space. So when in fact the TDT is back up to well above acceptable levels, that would be the conversation that we would want to start having. Is can we look at that connectivity and the meeting rooms? But we know it's not going to be just turned back on, and we may have to go back out and have a community process and really look at what has changed in the industry. Is that exactly what we want to do? What is different and involve the community in a bigger way, almost like and truly, you know, starting over. While we do have design plans at 50%, you know, we may have to go through a process to reacquire that and put a bid in place because we have terminated the contract. So it will be more or less a starting over. But for all practical purposes, you know, that plan has been shelved.
Mark Tester, it's interesting you bring up 9/11 because, I mean, that has been an event that people have talked about in terms of the impact it's had on the economy, and especially when it comes to tourism, right? I mean, even thinking about TDT, you know, it's been said that we've seen levels this past year that there haven't been since 9/11 and the huge impact that had on the tourism economy in the United States. So it's kind of interesting that you're talking about a design that was initially kind of impacted by that catastrophe, and now we're talking about a catastrophe, you know, some 20 years later, which is also having an impact on the way the convention center is going to look down the track.
Yeah, and there's no doubt. I mean, you know, the 9/11 tragedy has certainly, you know, devastated our country and stopped the industry for a very short period of time, and then rebounded with, you know, in an economic depression, but rebounded, you know, back to somewhat sort of business very quickly. This has been absolutely entirely different, where the entire industry, the entire country would shut down for such mm-hmm. length of time. And no one could have predicted not only the to the extreme, but to the length of time that the pandemic has occurred.
This is a tough position to be in, right? You're in charge of a massive convention center. You're facing a pretty uncertain future at this point, but are there some signs of optimism? I mean, do you sort of feel like the convention center and the traffic that it normally sees is going to come back in some form in 2021?
You know, absolutely. You know, how quickly it comes back, you know, it will truly depend on how the vaccines go and also the health of the industry that event is in. You know, events are truly representative of the industry that they are part of. So if they are healthy, then their event will be healthy. But mm-hmm. there is pent-up demand. People need to get together. In the case of medical events, continuing education, that is absolutely the best place. So there is an absolute need for face-to-face. And so, and not only that, we're in a great position in comparison to other, you know, destinations. And we say that optimistically, and that's what we're certainly trying to be here, you know, in Orange County in Orlando. We have a reputation as a very clean, very safe city that does things the right way. We're an outdoor city where you could come in and be outdoors, and that is an advantage for safety. People want to do events outside. They want to have activities outside. And so that gives us, you know, a real advantage. And then the reputation, again, what our airport has, what the theme parks have, you know, are worldwide stellar reputations for cleanliness and safety. And so I think of any destination, we're ready to recover, hopefully, as quick or quicker than anyone else. So that's where we're trying to remain optimistic. We're working really hard to make sure that we're safe. The advantage we've been able to have with the temporary transfers of employees keeps them engaged and gets them ready to come back, and hopefully thankful that they've been able to keep a job and ready to resume, you know, what we've chosen as a career, which is in the face-to-face and convention industry.
Well, Mark Testa is the Executive Director of the Orange County Convention Center. Mark, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Support for Intersection comes from Advent Health and from our listeners. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find archived episodes on our website, wmfe.org/intersection. Production assistance for today's show from Clarissa Moon. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.